Chances are this story is familiar. We've heard it before. Jesus feeding the 5,000. People are getting hungry. Big crowd had come out to follow Jesus. They're getting hungry. And the disciples wanted to send them away to buy food. But Jesus said, oh no, let's feed them here. The disciples did a quick inventory. They said, look, we only have 2 fish and 5 loaves of bread. There's no way we can feed all these people. Now, did you notice? Nobody asked, what if it's too much? Nobody asked ahead of time, well, what are we going to do with all the leftovers? The assumption was it couldn't work, so the disciples tried to shoot Jesus down. And that's how it is if we live inside the limits of this world, if we live by fear instead of faith, if we live inside the myth of scarcity, while we're surrounded by incredible abundance. If that's how we live, then it becomes very easy to see what can't happen. And we right away jump to the negative and say, no, it's not going to work. So how do you see the world working? And this isn't, by the way, just a glass half full or half empty kind of thing. It's about what is possible if we step outside of our world of limits and get out of the way and let God get to work. Now, of course, there is the realistic side of us. Changed my oil last night. My truck, I need 6 quarts. I looked on the shelf in my garage. I had 2. No matter what I did, that wasn't going to become 6. So very quickly, I went to AutoZone. Okay? Not a miracle, quick trip to AutoZone. But that part of us wants to ask, how did this happen? Where did all the food come from? Now, we've probably heard some different explanations. One of them that I particularly like has to do with this Norwegian dish called lutefisk. Do you know what lutefisk is, any of you? Okay. Just in case you're not Norwegian, this is what it is. You take herring, which is bad enough fresh, okay? You dry it for, a year. And then you soak it in lye, L-Y-E, that caustic stuff, lye. And then you try to soak the lye out of it, and then you boil it, and then they eat this stuff. Now, where I worked before coming here, in southwest Wisconsin, that part of the state is one where if you're not Norwegian, you're a Holstein. And the church kitchen, one of the churches, typical 19th century church basement kitchen, used to be yellow Formica counters in that kitchen. Well, they had served so much lutefisk over those counters that it was completely white. Took the color right out of the Formica. They eat that. So, one explanation is the fish Jesus had was lutefisk. And everybody said, oh, couldn't eat another bite. Truth is, this story does not tell us where the additional food came from. Now, traditionally what people like to do is we make assumptions. We assume that because it's about Jesus, something really powerful and supernatural needs to happen. You know, stars falling out of the sky and all that kind of stuff. So we like to assume sometimes that Jesus somehow turned stuff that was there into bread and fish. But the story doesn't say that. All Jesus says to the crowds is, have a seat. And he holds up 2 fish and 5 loaves and gives thanks. And has the disciples start passing them out. One of the places we can get stuck with miracle stories is sometimes the focus can become too supernatural, so that there's no room for us mere mortals to get to work. See, if we assume that Jesus somehow transformed objects there into food, that raises a bunch of questions like, how come Jesus doesn't turn stones into food today? I mean, think about this. This is Sussex. We have a few rocks around here, for crying out loud. Okay? If Jesus would turn them into food, we could put our food pantry out of business right now. Why doesn't Jesus do that? If we assume Jesus somehow made food appear, it leads us to assume that God must be working in really fantastic ways that break the laws of physics and nature. Or, If it was Jesus who made the food just show up, then maybe we assume that that's his job. And we watch. We go, ooh, ah. But our story doesn't tell us where the food came from. All it says is Jesus blessed the food and started handing it out. The disciples gave it to the people, and next thing we know, there's 12 baskets left over. So a less supernatural interpretation suggests that the act of sharing showed everybody there that that's what you do. It's good and appropriate to share what they brought for themselves. See, the context is, this was a time when if you left home, you always brought food for the day with you. There were no drive-thrus, or I guess a walk-through, okay? If you wanted to eat, you brought it along. Whatever you ate came from home, period. No other choices. So chances are almost everybody there had food with them. So some suggest this. Which one is doing God's will? Which one is living in God's way that Jesus calls the kingdom of God? Waiting for Jesus to turn stuff into food? Or leading people to share what they had with those who needed it? Now, this could have been ruined very easily. All it would have taken to wreck this story was for Jesus to give in to the naysayers, the ones who said, oh, we can't afford it. We don't have that kind of money. The ones who said, oh, look, don't go feeding those people. They're like stray cats. You feed them once, they're never going to work again, and they're going to show up at your door every day looking for a handout. The cold-hearted world many times would just as soon let the hungry people starve. In the 19th century, during the Irish potato famine, a member of the British Parliament actually stood up and said this out loud. The starvation of Irish, because of the famine, will take care of the problem of the surplus population. Once enough of them die off, they will be able to feed themselves again. So we shouldn't do anything because that will ruin free enterprise. Then there's a guy I heard at the Y a number of years ago who said that wars, disease, and starvation are God's way of keeping overpopulation in control. Pretty easy for a well-fed white guy to say at the Y who's going home to his own house and not a refugee camp. Do miracles still happen today? Sure they do. But it's also real easy to wreck it. All it takes to prevent miracles from happening is to say no. Focusing on what can't happen. Giving into our fear that there's not going to be enough. That is how churches choose to die. And there's a bunch saying those very words who are actively dying right now. Driven by fear and limits. Saying things like, well, we got to take care of ourselves first, pay all of our bills before we even think of giving anything to anybody else. There's all kinds of ways that we justify preventing miracles from happening. And every time we do, we end up limiting what God is able to do in the world through us. But you see, God chooses to act in ways that are not fantastic or defy the laws of nature. Truth is, God put a really good system in place. There is plenty to go around. What we have is a distribution problem. It's a logistics roadblock. God chooses to work in small ways through us. The difference is where our focus is going to fall. On what we're sure cannot happen, or on what we think might happen. So what can happen if we don't say no? Remember that container of medical supplies we sent to a hospital in Tanzania about 5-6 years ago, like around the hospital? They sent us this cross afterwards as a sign of thank you. Okay. And the before pictures, oh, jeepers, the before pictures. Remember that hospital looked like a Civil War era hospital in our country, something from the mid-19th century? They were hand-washing sheets, surgical gloves, and get this, catheters and line drying them so they could all, and I mean all, be used over. To outfit that hospital to at least mid-late 20th century standards would have cost about $400,000. Remember how much that container full of supplies cost? Nothing. Not a cent. Now that could have been ruined with enough loud voices that said, oh, can't afford it, can't do it. But we found out that many clinics and hospitals and medical suppliers throw stuff away after it's used once. The apparatus that they use to put in surgical staples typically come with 20 or 50 staples in them, and after they're used once, they are thrown out. Those things were collected, put in a container, and shipped, and the only cost was shipping. Who would have thought? Who would have thought a hospital would be outfitted? And by the way, good timing, because that's in the heart of one of the areas where Ebola is becoming a problem. And I want to tell you, that hospital is full. It is full. Who would think we'd participate in feeding not 5,000, but millions of hungry people? So how many will you feed? Well, 5,000 might feel like too many, and that's one of Satan's favorite tricks, to get us to assume that the need is so great we can't take all of it on, so we shouldn't do anything. Yet one bag of food brought in here feeds a family for a day at our food pantry. You chose to keep the food pantry open at Bread of Healing for 12 extra weeks this year. That's 200 families for 12 weeks. That's a lot of people. The people who came out to Jesus to hear him, they probably had food with them. The miracle might be that they began to share. Do miracles still happen? Sure they do. The question is whether we will be open to them, whether we will say yes. Saying no is easy. Figuring out why things can't happen, any fool can do that. God calls us to get out of the way, so God can get to work in us and through us. And Jesus calls us to be the ones in whom he has felt and known in this world.